Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today. Good morning, everyone. It's Monday morning, and this is Women Leading the Way Radio Show, which is brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Michelle Berquist, your host, and with me today is Mara Hoover, who is one of the regional vice presidents of Five Rings Financial. But what you really want to know about Mara today is that she's 20-something, and she's done incredible things. I feel old, Mara. Mara, are you there today?
I'm here.
Yes. Well, you shouldn't feel old. I'm totally feeling old. I'm like, you're 20-something. You know, our topic today is on 20-something and making things happen in business. And I've looked at and known you for a while, and I see some of the things you've done at 20-something, and you make me tired, make me really tired. But it's going to be a good show today, so I'm excited to have you on the show. Are you glad to be here?
I'm thrilled to be on the show, Michelle. It's going to be fun.
And you just we had a couple of minutes right before the show, but you are just coming back from an amazing trip to Chicago, Illinois, if I think you said earlier, right?
Yeah, I headed over to Rochester, New York to meet my brand new nephew, and then my husband and I went on a little Chicago adventure. So, yeah, we're excited to be back and appreciating the sun.
Appreciating San Diego. It's funny how we do that. We're on the other end of the U.S., but yes, anything in the Midwest right now is a little bit sketchy based on the weather, right?
Oh, very chilly.
Okay, well, listen, what I want to talk to you about today, and for all of our listeners this morning, you know, what we're going to talk about is just really, you know, how does a 20-something do all the things that you've done? And if you don't mind sharing, Mara, it's like, you know, where did you start working? Because you're 20-something, so we're going to play that card a little bit today. And I'm going to share something personally on the show, that I'm turning 50 this year. So that's why I'm feeling old. And I want to be inspired by a 20-something and go, my gosh, if just some people could do many of the things you've accomplished. You've published a book. It's like you're at a high level with a financial services firm that I know you absolutely love and adore, and you guys do some fabulous things, which we'll talk about. But I'm going to ask you to start with, it's like, what was your first job? And it's like, you know, how can we bottle your motivation? That's my two questions. What was your first job, and how can we bottle you? How do you find your drive and ambition, girl?
Okay, well, I think that the first job and the ambition are kind of all tied together. I come from a long line of entrepreneurs. So when I was growing up, I never knew that one could just go out and get a job and get a paycheck. I learned from my dad, my grandpa, and his father before him that what you do is you pick something that you want to do and you create your own business. So I was always really impressed with what my grandfather accomplished, and he basically created his own jobs, his own businesses, things that had never been done before. In the 60s, he moved to Carlsbad and was one of the first to put cut flowers into grocery stores. So he just had this idea and started it. And so then I watched my dad, who didn't want to pursue the family business. He decided to start his own construction company. And that's where my first job came into play, because I was probably about 4 or 5 when I went onto my first 2-story roof. And I would go and be the cleanup crew with my dad at his job sites. So my job was to go around and pick up all of the nails that had been left by the messy framers and other contractors that were on the job site. So I got paid a penny a nail for some years until I grew my negotiating skills and said, hey, Dad, I think I deserve more than a penny a nail. And at that point, he knew it was time to employ me in the office doing filing, phone calls, that sort of thing. So it just sort of grew from there. But that's kind of how my first job got started. I was about 5 years old.
Wow. And from when you left from your dad's business then, did you start your own business from that point, or did you go and work for somebody else at any point? Or has it always been Mara the entrepreneur?
You know, I did try my hand a couple of times. I worked at a local surf shop in college. I worked at the bookstore on campus. But really, it was those were just sort of filler things. I knew that wasn't what I was going to pursue for the rest of my life. I just always felt like I would have to invent a company or come up with a way to be an entrepreneur within a company.
Well, and, you know, describe to me, because when you and I first met, which was years ago, I was working very hard, as I recall, to promote our first annual Business Women's Mega Mixer. And I do want to ask you about your Wine, Women, and Wealth Expo, which was just freaking fabulous, by the way. And I know how jazzed the Voices of Women board was, and Jenny Prisk is one, because I want to talk about how hard and how much work it is to produce an event, which you will lament with me on. So we'll talk about that in a bit. But you started with a direct sales organization. Is that right? I mean, you were with Nu Skin. That's when we first met. So how did you get involved into that? Because that's entrepreneurial, and I'm kind of curious. You know, it's for some people. It's not for others. But how did you get into a direct sales organization with your dad's business? Do you mind sharing?
I don't mind sharing at all. What happened was I started taking over my dad's business after I graduated from Pepperdine University. I went to Pepperdine not knowing what I was going to do, but about 2 years into school, I really started paying attention to the fact that my dad had built an unbelievable local construction company here in the North County, and I felt like since he had no sons, he really had supposedly had no one to take it over, and I said, Dad, I think this is something that I want to pursue. I had actually become a project manager for him during the years that I was just getting out of high school and during the summers when I was home from college. So
can I ask, Mike, you're such a girly girl. I can't even see you in construction, which cracks me up.
Imagine
I mean, these little
me
hats,
in a t-shirt,
the little
jeans and flat shoes. That's why I'm so eccentric now.
Yeah, okay. Because I'm like, man, I just don't see that fitting. So I'm sorry, I had to interject there. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so basically what happened is about early 2008, we were transferring another 10% of the stock over to me, and my dad at the end of 2008 was going to leave and actually do a semi-retirement, stay on to consult, but I was going to be taking over the business. And unfortunately, we all know what happened in 2008. In October, basically everything fell apart right in front of our eyes. The phone stopped ringing. We both lost 50% of the values of our 401ks. It was just sort of a very difficult time. And what I saw is if I stayed on board and worked with that company when there wasn't enough to keep both of us busy, my dad was paying me out of his ability to retire. And so I decided it would be a much wiser thing if I just kind of headed out and said, well, what else could I do? And at that point, I went to my first networking group at Good Old Gals and met a woman who was working with the direct sales company, Nu Skin. Now, I'd never sold anything in my life. I'd never had to market myself. I had no idea what I was doing because when you have a company that's 30 years old and has a great reputation, people call you. So
right.
To turn around and try and do the opposite, you know, my husband called my year and a half with Nu Skin my unofficial MBA because there was so much that I needed to learn, and it was a perfect, you know, kind of platform for me to learn and grow and figure out how to do sales and marketing. So it definitely was a valuable time in my life, but it was time to move on, and that's when the opportunity to work with Five Rings sort of fell in my lap at another networking group. So,
And tell us a little bit about your specialty at Five Rings. I mean, I've been to Money 101, a wonderful, 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 you know, evening dinner and / meeting where you learn about, you know, really some of the myths of investing and kind of looking at what we're up to think about, you know, putting money away, and there's a different mentality that comes out of that. Do you mind kind of going over the Five Rings focus and mission, if you don't mind?
Absolutely. I mean, I was intrigued with Five Rings as a client first. It definitely wasn't something that I woke up as a small child and said, I think I'm going to go and be in the financial services industry. But when I met Denise Aaron, she's one of the owners or partners with the company and also West Coast Vice President, we met at a networking group, and she approached me about taking the time to learn some different options within kind of retirement investing options. And so I sat down with her, and I was intrigued. And, of course, the first thing I did was go to my dad and say, hey, Dad, I want to make sure that I'm not getting myself into something that's, you know, a scam, pretty much. You got to go with me to this Money 101 thing. And by the end of it, he was totally on board and really loved what they were all about, and so it just sort of blossomed into a career from there. What I love about Five Rings is that they really focus on two different areas within our population that has just been completely ignored. The first being middle Americans, those that maybe don't have, you know, $100,000, $500,000 or $1 million, $100,000, $500,000 or $1 million to get their foot in the door at a high-end wealth advisory firm, but still want to be able to build a financial future. But within that, where my focus really is working with women and helping them to feel empowered about what their options are, because it's just not something that's taught in school. So
yeah,
that's what I love about the company.
No, and I could lament for hours with you about what's taught in school and not taught in school, and I don't have children, but it's like, you know, it's amazing to me because I'm, as an ex-commercial banker, you know, I mean, fundamental things about just managing money. And again, I'm not trying to be critical about it other than say it should be something that we look at, because I never learned how to balance a checkbook when I was in school. I learned how to balance a checkbook because I worked at a commercial bank, because I had to, because I was seeing how other people would screw up their accounts. You know, I mean, it's just the managing money, and for women especially. I mean, it just seems like still so many women, you know, really don't take control of their financial future. Do you see that a lot?
Well, I think that really the way that the financial industry has been built is it is a good old boys club. It's 95% older white men and 5% women that are there to teach and coach and train. So it's been done from men for men for so many years that now we're starting to see this giant shift of wealth from the hands of men to women, whether that's because a parent passes away, divorce, if she becomes widowed. I mean, there's so many different reasons that a woman could become in control of her money. And the scary thing is 75% of those women say they're not ready to deal with it because they haven't been trained, coached, taught, and they don't feel like there's a place where they can go and ask those quote-unquote stupid questions, which aren't stupid. It's just that we don't normally allow ourselves to ask those questions.
Right. You know, what's interesting, though, it's like I have to say, I mean, again, like I said, I'm going to turn 50 this year, ouchie, ouchie, and you're still in your 20s on things. But, you know, it used to be that financial planning, it was, you know, because my father and my grandfather came from Northwestern Mutual, which is, they call it, quote, unquote, the quiet company. It's supposed to be quiet because it's all about serious investing, serious putting away. And what I think that you've done, along with Denise, obviously, because Denise Arend is the kind of like big dog here on this one, but what you've created now through the Wine Women and Wealth stuff is that you've created a fun way for women to engage and interact and then discuss financial services. Am I right on that? Because you guys have created such an amazing community of people that come to the Wine and Women and Wealth events. Can you kind of talk about that and how did that come up? Because women, first of all, women love wine, so yes, I'm in that with them. And second of all, it just seems like that has just cooked up all over. And from that, it's like, are you finding that's a great way to then have the entree to have the conversation about, you know, your financial future with some of these attendees? Is that kind of the game plan?
Absolutely. What we've seen happen, and what my own experience was, the first time I started investing in my 401k, I was 16 years old. And everyone just sort of patted me on the head and said, oh, isn't it cute, a little girl trying to save money. And so that was my first experience with sort of not, I won't say being belittled, but it just, I wasn't taken seriously. And I feel like a lot of women are in that same boat. And the way that the financial services industry has typically dealt with their clients is, I'm very serious. I'm wearing a black suit and a tie. I'm going to make you feel very small when I stand up here on my soapbox and tell you how great I am and talk to you at a PhD level about something you absolutely do not understand, so you think I'm smart and give me all your money. And that's sort of the feeling that a lot of people have had, and it doesn't work well for women. Women, if they're going to have a relationship with someone and have them helping them make their financial decisions, they need to feel comfortable with that person. And so what Wine Women and Wealth does is just gives us a platform for people to get a chance to know us. Because women especially are going to do business with women that they like. And so we have opened the door with Wine Women and Wealth as really a no-strings-attached networking group that offers some of that education about how women relate to money. We don't even get into the who, what, where, when, why of what you should do with your money, because we really feel like the relationship part of how we feel when we're dealing with money and maybe how that was brought from an experience in childhood. Did our parents fight about money? Did we have a nasty divorce? All of those different things really need to be discussed before we can start making those decisions. And so that's what the platform of Wine, Women, and Wealth is.
And for you with Wine, Women, and Wealth, I mean, are you guys looking to expand to other places? I mean, how? What's kind of like the methodology on the growth of that? Or do you run a couple of them? Is that correct?
I do. Denise Arend is the one who actually started Wine, Women, and Wealth, and it started out of necessity. She moved here about 5 years ago from Colorado and had no girlfriends. She was here with her brother-in-law and her husband, and that just wasn't going to cut it. So she decided, hey, I'm going to get some wine, I'm going to bring over some girlfriends, and if I talk about money, it'll be a write-off. And we sort of say that as a joke, but really that was the main intention. She just needed girlfriends. So when I signed on, there were two locations. Since then, we've expanded to 8 locations in Southern California. But the most exciting thing is we're a 55% female company nationwide. So we've expanded into about 15 different states with Wine, Women, and Wealth. And part of my trip to Chicago was to actually launch the first Wine, Women, and Wealth in Chicago. So we're growing by leaps and bounds, and Wine, Women, and Wealth popping up all over the country because it works. It's the future of how we do financial services with women.
I think it's awesome. I mean, I hear so much buzz around town with that. But, you know, I'm going to come back to that because I know you guys put on your expo this year that was to raise money for a nonprofit. You were hugely successful. I mean, everybody I talked to at that event, which I very, you know, happily was part of the attendee people that were there and somebody who exhibited. But you wrote a book. I mean, you're 20-something. Mara, it's like, come back to being a self-publisher here. And first of all, the book's name is incredible, My Grumpy Husband. I hope everybody will pick up a copy of it. I'll give you a chance to kind of say where people can get it in a minute. But how the heck did you come up with a book idea? And was it before you came on with Five Rings? Or it's like, where do you find time with all this?
Well, actually, the book started right about the time that I was still working with Nu Skin, and it was one of my goals. I had some crazy goals when I was little. I wanted to travel to all 7 continents before I was 30, write a book before I was 30, and become a millionaire before I was 30. So
was this really something that you consciously, did you write that down, or was it just something in your head you said, I want to do before I'm 30?
It was something, I did not write it down until later on, but about 5 is when I decided those were the kind of things that I wanted to accomplish, and for some reason,
wow,
30 was the number that I picked. I have no idea why.
Okay. Wow, says something about you. Says a lot. In a good way.
So basically, at the time that I started working on the book, it sort of popped up out of nowhere. I had always knew I wanted to write a book, and I have this great, adorable husband who I just have the best time with. But he, every once in a while, I noticed he would get grumpy about stuff, and I would take it very personally. And one of the things I've seen with women is we have a tendency to blame ourselves for everything. We are convinced that it's our fault that he's not happy, or that, you know, the kids are doing this or that or whatever's going on. And so I would oftentimes blame myself when he would get grumpy, and he'd just say, listen, I'm just hungry. That's it. Stop taking it so personally. And so I started noticing all of these different things and started talking to his friends about it. And turns out that there were 6 main reasons why a guy would get grumpy. It had absolutely nothing to do with his wife. It was whether he was hungry, tired, a lot of basic S's. And so I told him, hey, this is the book I want to write. And he said, well, if you write it, you have to call it My Grumpy Husband. And
he's the one that told you that.
Oh,
how funny.
Yeah. And I said,
wow.
Well, you realize that if we call it that, you're going to be the grumpy husband for the rest of your life. He's like, I don't care. I think it'll be funny. So that's where it was born.
And I've heard you speak on the topic, and it's like, seriously, it's hysterical. It's almost like it's a comedic show when you talk about some of the different pieces from the book, because I don't know a woman out there, at least for me, I think of my husband, and I just go, oh, my God, it's so true, you know, some of the different pieces of it.
Yep, and that's the funny thing is it's something that once women start talking about it, there's just so much laughter because it's true. We start thinking, oh, my gosh, this has been driving me crazy for the last 30 years, and Now you tell me it's really that simple. And so it just gets pretty funny. But the best part is that the guys that read it are validated, and they're saying, oh, good, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm just like every other guy.
I love it. Okay, so we're gonna interrupt here for a little commercial break. So, you know, for people that want to reach you or get your book, why don't you share how to contact you and where people can find My Grumpy Husband, because it's a fabulous book.
Well, mygrumpyhusband.com is the best place to actually get your hands on the book, and then we do have a community of women that are sharing all about their different stories on the My Grumpy Husband Facebook page. So those are the two different ways that you can get connected with me.
And how do people find you if they want to contact you individually, not for the book? You have your own website, Mara Hoover, right?
I do. I have marahoover.com. So try and make it easy, My Grumpy Husband and Mara Hoover, and I'm all over Facebook, LinkedIn, and learning about Twitter, so we'll see about that.
I love it. And you're 27. You should know everything about Twitter. Why don't you know everything about Twitter?
You know, the weird thing is, when I get classified into my generation, I don't fit. I sort of was on this weird cusp. We didn't get computers as soon as some others, so I'm still more of a write-it-down-on-paper kind of person, which people think is bizarre for a 20-something.
Yeah, bizarro.
Weird. I love making handwritten lists and crossing them off.
Oh, you're funny. You're funny. Yeah, you're very different than your generation. But, you know, we all have little, like, pieces like that. So flipping, we're kind of like on the downhill slide here a little bit, but how did you come up with the idea for your expo for Wine, Women, and Wealth? I mean, obviously the events are very successful. I think they're an amazing way to connect women all over, because you guys are national now, from what I understand. How did the expo come about? And I have to ask you, how much work was it to put on an expo? Share it with me.
Well, the idea of the expo came from Denise. She's always wanted to do, you know, a larger event where we were giving back to the community. And so now that we had grown the Southern California area to our 8 locations, we thought it would be really fun to get all of those women together that attend those, and then as well as open it up to other women in the community that may not have heard about Wine, Women, and Wealth. So it was sort of a twofold, and then we also figured, hey, we've got to raise money for a nonprofit. That's the best way to give back. And we happened to meet Jenny Prisk. She was a panelist at the Voices at the CWI, one of the CWI panel forums, and she was sort of talking about business, but just mentioned a little bit about Voices of Women. And Denise and I literally looked at each other right at that time, and we thought, this is it. This is going to be the perfect match. And so we sat down with her afterwards, and I think we planned that expo in 3 or 4 months, and it was a ton of work.
How much work? I mean, have you ever done an expo before?
No. The biggest events I've ever planned were weddings, and so to have an entire day is just, it's a whole nother level, because you literally have to think about every single minute what's going to be happening. And so I literally, for 2 weeks before the event, was up until probably 1:45, 2 o'clock in the morning. I'd get up the next morning at 7 and just every little detail. It woke me up in the middle of the night. I just wanted it to be as perfect as possible. So it was a ton of work.
Let me share with you, from an outsider looking in and somebody who was an attendee, it's like, it was those little details, Mara, that really set you apart. I mean, honestly, it's like, I'll just share with our listeners that, you know, events are so much more than name tags. In fact, one of our previous radio show interviews was with a woman who does event planning. And it's like, it's those little things behind closed doors that nobody has an idea of what it takes to put on. I mean, you know, you do, but it's like, I'm not trying to slam it, just saying it's a lot of freaking work. And one of the things I noticed that was just, to me, really impressive was the little things, like you had us hop from table to table, which I thought was fabulous networking. And, you know, as soon as people got up and took a break, it's like, one of the things I loved most was you guys had, however you organized it, that the tables were cleared and new water glasses, new linens were put on the table. So you weren't sitting down to another table where it was like you had dirty glasses from who was sitting there before, which I've been to events where they do that, and that just drives me crazy. You know, speaking of, when I'm not a germaphobe, but that was one little detail. And some of the others, I mean, the little, you know, handouts that you had and envelopes, and everything was organized and just fabulous event. And if I can ask, and you can share, how much did you guys raise for Voices of Women? Because as I understand it, all of the profits, you know, the net profits went to Voices of Women. You guys didn't take a penny. Is that right?
That's right. We just basically wanted to cover the cost of the event, and then anything that was left over was going to Voices of Women, and we were able to raise over $6,000 for them. So for our first event, we thought that was great. We know there's some stuff that we can tweak next year. Our goal is to get it up to a $10,000 donation, so we're pretty excited about all of that.
And are you guys going to stay with the same nonprofit, or are you going to mix it up and do other women's organizations or other organizations?
We've decided for next year, which the event's going to be November 8th, 2013, we are going to partner with Voices of Women again. What we like so much about Voices of Women is that they raise funds, but more to turn around and support other women's organizations. So it's a great way for us to fuel them, and then they can go out and make those donating decisions and be able to support local and international organizations. So that's what we loved about working with Voices of Women.
No, it was very cool. And again, like I'm saying, I can't believe all the stuff you're involved in. So, I mean, share with me and with our listeners, I mean, you're getting ready here shortly, in a few years to turn 30. So now that you've accomplished everything you ever wanted to in your life, ha, 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 it's, I mean, what do you do to keep yourself motivated? I mean, just for people that are, let's say, you know, a little more senior, or just those of us that maybe feel like, gosh, it's like, how do you... I want to ask you, how do you stay organized with all you manage and do? I know you don't have children right now, but how do you keep yourself focused? How do you keep yourself, you know, the drive, the ambition? That's what I really want you to share as far as what can people take as far as little snippets of advice and bottle some of you.
Well, what I've found is that finding what I honestly and truly feel is my life purpose has really helped me to stay focused. I worked with a business coach, Sarah Clark Williams, from Launch Your Life for about the last year and a half. And through my work with her, I've really been able to see, how do I tie my book together with what I'm doing at Five Rings? I mean, what is the purpose of all of these things that I continue to do? And so by sitting down and doing some of that self-analysis, what I've found is my purpose in life is to empower women so that they can lead a full, joyful life. That's my purpose on this planet. And so the way that I've sort of chosen to do that is through the book, really empowering women around relationships and feeling confident that they are amazing, beautiful, fabulous creatures. And if they're in a relationship, that person loves them to death because they're wonderful. And then on the financial side, I mean, there's just so much emotionally that gets tied into the financial issues. And so that's my goal, is to just give women peace about those two main issues, the hot button issues that we tend to fight about most, whether that's with ourselves or with our spouses. And by doing so, allowing women to feel more free, joyful, and being able to live their lives and enjoy things. And so that's really what's been driving me over the last year as I've been trying to put words to that. And so my goals for the next 10 years is to build a national speaking and training company that basically goes out and empowers women in those two areas with hands-on workshops, day-long events, possibly weekend events. So I'm just starting to put all of those pieces together, but just keeping my eye on the prize as far as what I want to accomplish in life and how I can empower women is what keeps me going.
Very cool. Well, I have no doubt that, you know, many of us, or at least those of us listening, will say, oh, we knew Mara Wynn. Knew Mara Wynn. Who's Mara? We know Mara. Hey, a couple of things. I want to shift over into another side of the house, if you will, and that is, I mean, all we've talked about is, oh, you're fabulous, you're great, you're wonderful, you're motivated. What gets you down? What kind of, like, you know, brings you down a little bit? Because I never see you where you're kind of down and out and all that, so I'm kind of curious. Is that a private thing for you? It's like, do you just never let the, you know, buggies get you, or kind of curious?
I hate laundry.
Look, come on.
That gets me down.
That gets you down.
I was trying to put 6 loads of laundry away after our trip this morning, and I'm just thinking, man, I don't need to be doing this right now.
Yeah, okay. I'm like, more than laundry, girl. It's like, there has to be head talk in your head. It's like, because I'm going, how does somebody like you, you know, we all think, you know, we're infallible in our 20s. I remember when I was 20, I was like, you know, I'm going to say, for lack of a better word, you know, our shit doesn't stink. It's like, you know, but what kind of gets you, you know, off track a little bit? I'm kind of curious if you did. And if you don't want to share, you can say, shut up, Michelle, and we'll move on. But
No, I'm happy to share. I think the interesting thing is I've lived a very precocious life, if you will. And when I was in elementary school, I was teased really badly because you might have noticed that I'm rather eccentric and have been my whole life. So I had no friends. Literally in fifth grade, I would go to the corner of the playground and use little sticks and dig little tunnels in the dirt by myself. And nobody liked me, or I felt like nobody liked me. And so I had to deal with a lot of those issues at a very young age. By junior high school, I realized that I was cute enough that at least the guys would like me. So I was a tomboy, and I went skateboarding with all of the guys, and I was the filmer. So I would take the video camera, and I would film everything. And then we would go back to my house and watch the videos that we had filmed. And then by high school, I just figured, you know what, screw it. Whoever likes me, and whoever doesn't, doesn't. And so I kind of went through a lot of that head noise at a little bit younger age and just decided at that point I wasn't going to live my life for somebody else. You know, I've just read a great book called Tribes that Ray Majors Wildman recommended, and it is a spectacular book. It basically teaches you to go out and find those people who love you and love what you're doing on the planet. And it's not going to be all 6 billion people. So my goal is just to build a tribe of people that I love and that love me, and that's going to be enough. Because from those experiences, from about 4th, 5th grade through the rest of high school, I really had to deal and grapple with a lot of those issues. And I would call my mom, and she knew that if it was a bad day and I was crying and, you know, I'd tell the nurse my stomach hurt, I'd make up some lie, and my mom knew to come get me. And she would come get me, and I would cry on her shoulder, and why doesn't anybody like me, and why does everybody... It was miserable. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now I just feel like I built that stability in myself over those years, and, you know, now I don't care if somebody doesn't like me. If you don't like me, I totally understand. I'm one of those crazy personalities, over the top. Either I'm for you or I'm not. So that's sort of how I've dealt with stuff, and that's what... And it still gets me down every once in a while, to be honest. But for the most part, I've put people that love me in my circle, and so that builds me up instead of tears me down.
That's a really great perspective. You are wise beyond your years, my dear. I'm telling you that right now. Because it's like, you know, it took me a long time to figure that out, and it's like it's the DNC list that it's like I have the do not care list where I go, you know what? Can't please everyone. It took me a lot of years to get there, but I think that's pretty wise advice. So listeners, listen in. You can't please everybody, and not everybody is your friend. And, you know, we all got to put – I love the book Tribes as well. It's like amazing, amazing book. Get it, Tribes. But before that, get your book, My Grumpy Husband, right?
Yes, definitely.
Now, I'm assuming – now, I'm going to wrap up with this because it's like, you know, one book is not enough for you from understanding you and unpacking you. Do you have more books in the works?
I definitely do. I have lots of books in my head, and one of my goals for this next year for 2013 is to build up that community of women and really start to get stories shared so that we can continue to build books. And I have a feeling some of my books will head in a more financial direction than relationships, but we'll see. My goal is to have at least 12 books at some point and get them all out there and you know, have a humorous conversation about all of this instead of being so darn serious all the time.
I have to say, folks, you heard it here. It's like not just one, but 12 books. Mara, 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 my goodness, girl. We'll put that down for your 40-year goal. I love it. And
I'm going to need to do something.
Exactly, exactly. Well, I know we're out of time. Is there any final thoughts or advice you want to give some of our listeners? Because seriously, you know, I put it in my write-up for you. It's like I want to bottle you and package you. It's like because that I think so many of us get down on ourselves. It has been a rough quite a few years. People have transitioned into new businesses, been laid off, started at new companies, started businesses, maybe seeing that it's not going as well as it could, or some people, you know, are waiting for the economy to turn around and have things take off again. So you're quite inspiring, my dear, and I want to thank you for your time. Any final words or thoughts for our listeners?
Well, just really dig deep and work with somebody, whether that's a business coach, a life coach, even just doing some activities you can do on your own to figure out what your purpose on this planet is. Because I think once you have that, your drive becomes so much stronger. And then the only other thing I'd say is go on vacation every once in a while and turn off your cell phone. I learned that lesson from my husband, so.
I like that one, and I don't think enough of us do. So on that final note, folks, turn off your cell phones. But it's the holiday season, so I hope everyone has some time with family and good friends. And, you know, it's one of those years where we reflect and look at the year and say, gosh, you know, I hope we can count our graces and the things that are good in our lives. So, Mara, thank you for your time. For all of our listeners, thank you for listening in. We had quite the amazing number today listening in. I hope you will see us again or listen to us again next Monday. That's our show for today. Again, it's I'm Michelle Berquist. Thanks, Mara. It's been my pleasure to be your host today. I hope you guys will listen in next Monday. And happy holidays, and we will see you next Monday, December 10th. Have a great day, everyone. Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence. the premier private membership organization where life-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.